We've reached agenda item number 12, which I believe would be the premiere movie of the day, Oysters, pertaining to oyster harvest restrictions.
You need a break?
The officer wanted to know if you wanted to call.
Want to hear the agenda item?
Yeah, capacity.
Mr. Pastor? They can't hear. Can we open the door a little bit? Yeah, would you open the door so if it's we've propped open? Is there anybody's personal effects in that room? Then why don't you go get your stuff and I'll let some of the overflow crowd go into this room.
They can stand on the side.
Mr. Commissioner, we take a little 5 minute break and then we can get those people in here and we can give them a little break.
All right, I'll tell you what, I think that's a good idea here. We're going to break for 5 minutes here. We're trying to get everybody in the hallway to have access to hear everything that goes in the room, so this is for their benefit. So we're going to take a break for 5 minutes. We'll be right back. Reconvene. Agenda item number 12, Chief O'Reilly.
Good afternoon, Commissioner, members of the Commission, and Dr. Wesson presented you information last month on the status of the fishery, so I'm sure he'll be able to answer any other questions. Of course, a key situation was the spat set that was mentioned to you, where 2010 and 2012 were good spat sets, 2013, 2014, not good spat sets. There is a little bit of promise this year already, but we'll wait and see how all areas do, and if it is a good spat set, then everyone's looking 2 to 3 years for, you know, production and harvest. So you know that part of it. I brought this information to you today because part of what Dr. Wesson will talk about will not only be the harvest seasons that will be proposed and have been through the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee, but also effort control. Effort control is a function of limited entry, and I thought it was important for the Commission to review some of the limited entry situations we have in the Commonwealth. So you can see 28.2.204.1. Talks about limited gear licenses and permit, and certainly the Commission can limit those gear licenses and permits. And if you'll notice down at the bottom, that was in the 1992 General Assembly, so that has been around for quite some while. Also, if you look at paragraph B, it gives you some ideas as to how the Commission is to look at limited entry situations, whether they be effort control, license control, permit control, harvest control, whatever that might be. And I can say that all of these factors down here from 1 to 6 were part of what the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee looked at. They had meetings in May, June, and July. This issue really goes back further in time to a few years ago, when it was apparent that the amount of harvesters certainly had grown quite a bit. And Dr. Wesson will go over that, but I think it's important that the dependence on the fishery by licensees is one thing that the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee was very interested in. Staff worked up a volume of data at every request that the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee had. Of course, Mr. Erskine is the chair of that committee. And I think that the dependence is something everyone worries about anytime you talk about any type of limited entry strategy. You'll often hear, we have to protect the full-time harvesters. There's some part-time harvesters. That's a really difficult issue to tackle. For the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee, what staff was able to do was to show the committee all fisheries, not just oystering, but all fisheries that anyone was involved with in terms of activity, in terms of harvest days, whether it be with crabs, oysters, finfish, whatever it was. So the committee certainly saw all that. And in turn, The efficiency number four, there's no doubt that the advent of the hand scrape has made it an efficient harvesting compared to prior to use of the hand scrape. And there's also no doubt that the number of economic and social consequences are there. They are always there anytime you talk about limited entry. In this country, one of the earliest limited entries occurred with the ocean quahog and the surf clam fishery, and that was in 1975, and it still exists today. It certainly has its critics, but since that time, I want to show you what has happened in Virginia and give you a characterization of the roads of limited entry that the commission has faced. None of them have been easy. One of the early ones was with striped bass right here. So by January 1, 1993, there were limited entry provisions. In the very beginning, all you had to do to remain in the striped bass fishery was fill out your paperwork. And surprisingly, many did not do that in 1991 and 1992. The season reopened in November of 1990, and following that, it was pretty much wide open. The industry itself asked for some type of limitations because the harvest amount for striped bass was only 211,000 pounds. Not a lot compared to most of the 1.5 million pounds that industry has been used to. But striped bass was an early one. It took from 1993 up until 1997 before the commission finally was satisfied that it had a good program. It's the ITQ program that you're familiar with today, where shareholders can transfer shares. But you can see some others. Black drum was an interesting form of limited entry back in 1994. And it was based on who had held permits prior to that. And it was really a situation where the recreational and commercial industries sat down and thought about what might be a fair quota. That went along with that. Some of the offshore fisheries, such as black sea bass up here and summer flounder, that's something coming mainly from federal waters with a lot of that harvest. But for Virginia, for black sea bass, that limited entry was designed on a directed fishery according to everyone's share that they had from 1997 through 2001. And the others remained in a bycatch. Something you might see with all these fisheries, which is different about oysters is a resident-only fishery. Any of the limited entry criteria for these fisheries that had to be enacted had to include criteria that could not exclude non-residents. For example, oysters is different. Today, we're just talking about the potential action by the commission to look at effort control in the oyster fishery. Horseshoe crab has a limited amount of harvesters. It's been through several turns of limited entry. It's now down to five different gear quotas. It's not a straightforward matter, as you know and as you've heard, to monitor all these quotas. One other one I'll mention is pound net. It's a little different because it's strictly a gear cap. It's really a limited entry where there's a cap of 161 licenses allowed, period. And if it falls below 161, there can be new entrants. That was simply done back in 1995, to allow those harvesters to retain gray trout, weak fish. And the ASMSC, which the commissioner mentioned earlier, allowed that substitution by this agency to allow pound net fishermen to forfeit licenses instead of having a closed season on gray trout at that time. So if you look at these species, certainly what the commissioner mentioned, for most of them, there is an involvement of ASMSC. And it has led to, once you get to the ASMSC, conservation of resources is number one, just like it is in 282203 of our Code of Virginia. But at the same time, among conservation, there's also allocation issues. And so a lot of the quotas that we have developed have also been because we have to have a certain allocation, and it's going to be limited. And today I think Dr. Wesson will explain to you that there are several important factors that brought staff to the meeting today to propose effort control. So thank you very much.
Dr. Wesson.
Yes, sir. Just to pick up from where we left off last month, obviously, we talked about the fact that, I mean, we're riding a high. I mean, we got highest, last 2 years have been the best catches we've had. You can see the blue there is the public that we're talking about. It was almost 300,000 last year, another jump from the year before. And basically, we've been living off very good spat sets that were bay-wide in 2010 and 2012. Interestingly, kind of from the conversations we had this morning on the leasing, we've actually see that you can see that the rate of increase in the private has not kept up. It actually, public got a little bit ahead of private this year, and I think just to show you what kind of things we're seeing, I just looked at mandatory reporting to look at these different rivers. And this, what we were talking about with Ben this morning was we've had this land rush for leases, and many of the leases have been large leases that have basically been taken up to harvest oysters that basically those leases were, those grounds were fallow for years. And so little populations of oysters got into them. And so we saw this real big jump in private production in 13 and 14, and you can see that now in our two biggest rivers, the James and the blue one and the red one, the York, we're starting to go down. And because it doesn't make any difference whether you are on public ground or private ground, if you take the oysters and you don't put back shell or seed in comparable amounts, your harvest is going to go down. And that's been the big concerns the staff has had about these big leases, that there's no way that there's enough shell for all those leases to take care of them. And those little pockets of orchards that have been taken up are important to us for potential spat sets for all the grounds in the future. Contrasting that, if you look at the purple one there for the Potomac and the green for the Rappahannock, in areas where people have concentrated on aquaculture, planting spat on shell, planting seed, they've actually made the production go up. So we've seen our private production go down a little bit this year because some of these areas that the land rush is on have been cleaned up, and now it's going to take a while for the hatchery-based and the better use of the grounds to catch up. And they are catching up, but we had a little bit of a stumble last year in just hatchery production, and we had some cold weather that affected some of the private production. But so private got a little bit behind this year in the production that they had. We're going to be talking about scrapes and dredges. These are the efficient gear types that that catch oysters very efficiently at low densities, and so we have to be very careful in how we manage them. We did not have a good spat set in 2011, 13, and 14. It's really hard for us to predict for certainty what the harvest will be, but as we went through last time, the areas that are going to be open, just starting up in the north, Tangier, that's our only dredge area. The standing stocks that are out there now per meter are about a quarter of what they were when we started last year. It's a big area, but still we anticipate that area will be down way more than 50%, maybe 60 or 70% down from what we saw last year. In the Rappahannock, these two areas are going to open up, Area 3 and 5. They have basically the same oysters, market oysters per meter as we had last year, so there are good stocks on them. They're just smaller than the area that was open last year. So by the fact that they're smaller, you're going to catch less. So we will see some decline in that area. And then these areas up here that we only see spat sets way at the Rappahannock occasionally, and we did see one in 2010, not so much in 2012 up there. So those areas have pretty much been harvested away. So in our recommendations, these areas are not even going to open. So what was caught up there last year in the past several years would not be available. Mobjack has orchards. Checked them this week. Standing stocks look pretty good there. I mean, we definitely have orchards per meter that are good there, just that there's not very many acres in Mobjack and compared to where we worked the year before in New York. So, I mean, things are good, are okay there. We haven't harvested them since we had the 2012 12 set, but there's just not going to be very many, much acreage to harvest from. For the Great Wicomico, that area is pretty stable. That area gets a good spat set routinely from up the river, where we have a lot of areas that are closed, and it's in pretty good shape, so harvest will be about the same there as it was last year. And then down in the James, again, because we have this large refuge of orchards up in the Handong area, standing stocks are about the same, area the same, so harvest should be about the same. So, you know, our best estimate in this is that we will see a pretty big decline in the harvest this next year. So, as Rob mentioned, we started meeting, because we were seeing this with the Shellfish Committee early, starting in February. We knew that, you know, we were seeing our areas in our best year being harvested away by half a season in most of the areas. The catch had gotten down. So now we know we're going into lower stocks. So we might have had too many people, twice as many people as we needed in a good year, and now we know we're going to have less years, so we certainly know we have way more than we need. So we began going through, and we showed them that we had 900 people that had been reporting harvest in the past couple of years. For hand scrapes, we had 300 people reporting harvest for dredges. And we, you know, we have to do something to both protect the stocks. We need to protect the sustainability of the industry, and we need to protect our grounds that we put shells on. If we grind them to death, then they won't be appropriate for spat sets in the future. So, you know, we're protecting habitat, we're protecting, trying to protect the industry, and we're trying to manage the stocks that we have. And when we talked about effort control, we knew that you can do effort control by limiting what people do, or you can do it by limiting how many people there are, or you can use a combination. And the things that we went through with them, we went through, you know, what we would do if we start limiting, keep the same amount of people, and what we would have to do to get us into line with what we thought the catch should be to protect the stocks and everything. And these are very draconian. They're very severe. If we want to do it just by a daily limit, you know, we would need 4 bushels. Per man to get us where we are. If we were, you know, we did it by shortening the seasons, basically you cut all the seasons in half. So, you know, where we see a lot of people in the same places, same time, if we cut the seasons in half, there's even going to be more crowding than we had. I mean, of course, it's these kind of things that the bushels and the areas are easy to enforce, so there's some, you know, value to that, but it's not good for the watermen. We could shorten a day basically in half, start at 8, finish at 12, so that you don't have very much time to work out there to grind the areas down. We could do some sort of individual quota that, I mean, you look at the mandatory reporting and you give everybody an amount, but or you take the different areas and you give them an amount. But the problem with these is that we will have to go into some system where we tag every bushel. And we do counts daily, and we just do not have the staff to do that, to be able to do quotas at this stage of the game. I mean, we just have way too many people. When you're talking about 900 people working and 300 people in one fishery and 300 in the other, keeping up with them for the whole season. So quotas just do not seem like an option. We also thought that, you know, maybe we could make everybody select one area. They go to that area. That's the only area they get, so basically, they get 3 months in each area, and when that 3 months is over, they're done. So these are not really good. If you're trying to sustain a healthy industry, these are not good things for health, for keeping the industry healthy, where you're trying to keep them being good, too. And then, obviously, since we've gone to a very efficient gear, we go back to the gear that's not efficient and go back to handongs and patentongs, and, again, that's not very palatable to all the industry. So what that left us with after we'd gone through all those is the, you know, coming up with some sort of effort control to reduce the number of people. We made a big step in that last year, and at least the commission, we set a control date for July 1st, 2014. When we did that, we came back a couple months later, and we actually put a cap on the number of hand scrape and dredge licenses, and said that it couldn't be any more. If you've never had one, you couldn't have it. But what the control date said is that we did not have to consider anybody that came in after July 1st in any of these calculations, that they would, you know, they basically were coming in at their own risk. And so as Rob mentioned, I mean, staff went to work on this, and we prepared just table after table after table for the committees to look at. We zeroed in on the time period from January 1st, 2011 to April 30th, 2015, because that's where we had the best mandatory reporting data. That's when the data had the best information on helpers. We could go in and we could find out everybody that worked on the boat, basically. If they had done their mandatory reporting correctly, we had them in there. So since there were many harvesters, because the commission set the words for, we put a cap, but it said anybody that had ever had a license before could get one. When we started looking at those numbers, we found that we had a tremendous amount of people that were sitting out there that could buy a license that never did. We were showing up before the control date. We had 786 hand scrapers after the control date. We had 108 more come in, but the total pool that was out there was 1,144. So we only had about 900 in, 1,144 that could come in. So you had a big amount of latent potential that could still come into the fishery, even by the commission stopping the sale of gear license to anybody new. And it was the same with the oyster dredge. You had 271 that were reporting harvest before the control date, and 47 that came in after the control date, which was just a little bit over 300, but there were 685 that had had licenses prior to that that could come in at any time. So in all the discussions we had, I mean, we kept the committee very aware that this latent effort was out there, and actually there was a lot of agreement amongst the Shellfish Committee that, you know, those ones that had not harvested probably should be looked at very hard. And as Rob mentioned, they were very interested in how we could separate a full-time person from a part-time person. And, of course, with the limited amount of equipment that we have to look at, I mean, we only have harvest to look at, we really don't know other things they might do. So it's really hard to determine that. The best we could come up with was to actually assign to just group everybody into, they call baskets, and on a number of days they work. And so if you worked, as an example, 3 days, you would go into 1 to 9 day basket. If you worked 13 days, you'd go into 10 to 14 day basket. So that was some way that you could start looking at how many days a person put into the oyster fishery, and that would be some indication of whether it was important to their livelihood. In a lot of the conversations, the number that came up, because there seemed like in most of our tables that we looked at, was 20 days. There seemed to be a natural break in a lot of these charts where less than 20 days, and then over 20 days it would jump up and there would be a whole lot more in it. So even though they never came to an agreement to do that, that was what we discussed the most. And after we had finally gotten through all the committee meetings and SMAC, basically they just could not come to a decision on effort control. I mean, they wanted to do something, but they didn't know what to do. They basically wanted somebody else to do it for them. So staff went back and looked at these things again, and as we thought about it, the grouping that we thought that made the most sense was to actually look at from July 1st, 2013 through April 30th, 2015. And that was for three reasons. It's because it's absolutely our best mandatory reporting data. It's our two best seasons that we had ever had in 25 years. And it's the time period that they had to buy a user fee. So it felt like if you hadn't bought a user fee by now, and the user fee is the $300 that they pay that actually goes back into the replenishment program for seed and shell for taking care of the ground that they're harvesting on it. So it seemed that was the 2 years to focus in on. And we included in your packet, you know, looking at just 1 year, the last year, and looking at 2 years. And it seems like the two-year one is the best one, is most complete, that has the most people in it. So that's the one that I'm going to kind of go through with you on what it's showing. The real obvious thing is that we have a bunch of people that are eligible to buy licenses that have no harvest reported. 357 of them in this group in the hand scrape are eligible and have never gotten one, and 52 bought one, but they never reported any harvest, so put it in their pocket or whatever they did. So that's 30% of the potential effort right there. And that's really important to remember, because we did have a lot of agreement amongst the affiliate committee, even though they never passed anything, that those were an important group to consider. For the hand scrape, there's 194 more people that reported harvest for less than 20 days a year. And it's for 2 years here, if you only worked in 1 year, you would divide your number of days by one. If you worked both years, you divided your number of days by two. So if you weren't penalized if you only worked one day. And after we had gone through this a lot and talked with the committee, it seemed like that they felt like if a person came in after the control date, put a really good effort in, showed he was really serious about being in the industry, that we should include him. So in these tables that we're showing, those people post-control date are in this group. I mean, they're in these numbers, 1144. And they just fall where they fall. So if you look at this group for the hand scrape, that's 52% of the potential effort, and they're only catching 9% of the harvest, which is a very small percentage. Those above 20, which is 541, which is still higher than probably we want in the fishery, catch 91% of the harvest. And, you know, it seemed like that was a good break point. We did the same thing for dredging. When you're thinking about dredging, though, you got to remember that the hand scrapes, if you remember on that table, they have all those different areas they can go to. Dredging is only in one place. It's only in Tangier. So when you talk about, you know, reducing effort 50% there, you know, you may end up, because in this case we have 685 potential people that could get licenses, you may want to limit it more because it's a very small area compared to the rest of the bay. But we see the same thing. We got 56% of the folks that could get licenses never got a license or either didn't report. There's no harvest activity. And then we have 99 more people that caught only 10% of the harvest. When we looked at this, I mean, I actually talked with some of the dealers that keep good records, and what it looks like in most of the ones that are in the less than 20 days, there are a lot of part-timers, and there are a lot of people that are the third men, that people that use two normally go with two guys to a boat, catch two limits at the beginning of each area when they open up. Catching is easy, so they'll pick up somebody to work for a while, and that gives them three limits a day. And then when the catch drops off, they boot them out, and so they don't accumulate many days. And that's what it looked like most of the less than 20s were falling into. So in this case, going down 20 days takes 70% out, and that's important, again, because the 30% that's left in the dredge fishery is catching 90% of the harvest. So it doesn't take as many people out there to catch them, and it seems like a lot more people with dredge licenses just put the licenses in their pocket and don't use them. A lot of times they get confused and buy a dredge license instead of a hand scrape license. Right, and so they end up having both. But the 206 people, again, is probably higher than we need to have in the fishery to keep it stable, but it's where the numbers fell out. So at the end of the day with the Shellfish Management Committee, the one thing they voted to adopt was the seasons that we had proposed, which are very similar to the seasons from the year before. The only slight change is that in the James, the hand scrape area, we moved the third month to March when there was a slack time in any kind of market orchards for the bay to split that up. They voted 9-3 to basically leave everything as it is, to make no changes in effort control. Don't make any changes in any regulation. Just leave it like it is and see what happens for one more year. And then they added in a motion to allow transfers amongst the people, 1144 and the 685 that are in it, so they can transfer amongst themselves if a new person wants to get in. But if you do not do effort control, a transfer at that stage would be terrible, because that allows you to trade out a zero that can go get a license for somebody that can then start working full-time. So transferability is important, but you need to have the limited entry in place first. So staff does not feel like it's safe to stop there. We do think we need some effort control, and we went back to the committee with I sent out an email asking the committee that should we have some sort of limited entry, and because in all these entry things that we're talking about, it doesn't start until January 1st of 2016, because we can't go take licenses away from the people that are in now. The only way to return their money, so everybody that's in now is in, and they're in until December 31st. So even if we do limited entry, we need to do some sort of control for this fall to get us through from October 1st to December 31st. And I pose these four scenarios for the hand scrape and dredge areas. And the one that it was nine people went for this first one, which is two men per boat, 8 bushels per day, take off one day a week. We had one person that wanted to go 6 bushels every day, 5 days, put two limits to the boat. And then we had one person that abstained and one person that didn't want any of them. So the one that they chose, you know, overwhelmingly was this first one that, you know, for the fall to go to have one less day. Another thing that you have to keep in mind is that if we don't do anything with effort control now, we will not be able to do anything with effort control again until January 1st of 2017. It's a long time period we have to go through to wait and see, and to see if there are any damages this year that could come, if the things that we were forecasting were really true. So it's of enough concern for for staff that we do think that some sort of limited entry should be started for the orchard fishery. And again, the recommendations are to protect the stocks and the stability of the fishery and to protect the culch and the future of the grounds that we're managing. And a limited entry system that in our recommendations would be that if you hadn't gotten your license prior to the user fee, you'd be ineligible for getting those two licenses. The second thing is if you had gotten the licenses after July 1st of 2013 and you never reported with them, you'd be ineligible for it. And then finally, that if you worked less than 20 days, again, in 20 days per season, you work one season or two seasons, it could be either one or it could be both, that you'd be ineligible to purchase gear licenses for the next year. The regulation in front of you establishes appeal process right from the get-go, how they can appeal it if they don't agree with it, if they think there's something wrong with their mandatory reporting. If we go to this, there's a way to transfer licenses amongst the participants in families. It can be done right away at death, or we have stipulations on how it would be done from commercial fishermen to commercial fishermen January 1st, 2016. What we've seen in orchard stuff and all the other fisheries is that when you make little changes, there are unintended consequences. And one thing that I'm suggesting right now is that we add patent tongs to the list of licenses that we're limiting and cutting off, because we don't know if should we make this change, if we have limited entry, that there would be some migration to our one little patent tong fishery that has enough people in it already. We also have added to the regulation that no person can serve as an agent for a public gear license, even though that's been the case forever. We just put it in the regulation for the first time. And again, the seasons that we're recommending were the Shellfish Management Committee recommended approval for. We are recommending that from October 1st to December 31st that have a four-day work week, taking Wednesday off for the hand scraping and dredge areas. The bushel limits would be for the hand scraping and dredge areas, two 8-bushel limits per boat. So 16 bushels is the maximum daily limit. For hand tong, patent tong, in everywhere but the James River, it'd be 8 per man for as many men that have the license and the user fee on the boat. So it wouldn't be limited to just the 16. And then the final one is that we're recommending for the first time, we've never had a limit on clean calls in the James River hand tong area, and we're recommending establishing a limit of 12 bushels for that area per man. And again, you multiply 12 by the number of men that are on the boat. So if you have 3 men on the boat, it's 36 there, which is more than all the rest of the areas in the bay. So that's a quick run through, and happy to answer any questions.
I imagine there's some questions from the commission. Dr. Weston. There are none. Thank you, Dr. Weston. Well, folks, let's set some ground rules here. I'm going to ask you to be civil. I'm going to ask you to be respectful. Commission is respectful for you. Please respect the commission. Try to make your comments succinct. And try not to repeat what a number of other people say. I'm happy to let this go for as long as you have to speak or that we can endure. So let's open the public hearing here. I would like Ms. Sullivan to go first.
It's nice to be before the commission again under different circumstances, and I am pleased to be before some of the new members I have not met previously. I'm here today to just make a few
Please state, Please state your name for the record.
I will. Ann Sullivan, and I'm an attorney at law, and I'm interested in the oyster business. As I look at your commission, it is twofold. You have the obligation to promote the general welfare of the seafood industry, as well as to conserve and promote the seafood and marine resources of the Commonwealth. And I have gone back and listened to the tapes of the Shellfish Advisory Management Group, and I have listened to and been very cooperative in obtaining information about what is being proposed. So I've made an effort to study it. I don't purport to be an expert in the field by any means, but I do have some overall comments to make. And I think the emphasis of the Shellfish Advisory Committee, as I listened to the recordings, has been on the harvest itself, with less review of the actual impact on the general welfare of the industry and those people who work in the industry. It is a balancing act, and it's a balancing act that this commission has to address today and address in their deliberations as to what is the most appropriate thing to do. I think there has been some discussion about limiting the harvest, limiting the operators, limiting the licensures, all of which are means of controlling the actual amount of the harvest. But they have different impacts, and I just wanted to address some of the things that perhaps had not been considered or presented in the initial remarks that were made. One of the things that was originally proposed was the bushel limit, and I think the commission and those in the audience have agreed that lowering the bushel limit is going to effectively wipe out the number of people that can participate in the industry because they just can't make a living if you limit the number of bushels. When you limit the number of hours, which is another thing that was considered, you're really affecting the efficiency of the industry, as you are with the number of the days that are allowed to be used. It's very expensive to operate these vessels. Fuel is expensive. Overhead is expensive, and all of those costs have to be split between each and every individual working on the boat. And it's a question of efficiency of time and product. And in the Commonwealth, we want our industries to be as efficient and as technologically savvy as they possibly can be. And some of these proposals are not promoting the efficiency of the industry. If you're talking about returning to hand tonguing, you're returning to technology that is 150 years old. And it's very hard on the individual. It's very hard on the health of the oysterman. And it probably is not a forward-looking solution to solving the problems that we have. The proposal to put 16 bushels as a limit per boat, as I understood the proposal here today, will just cause the third man on the boat to go find a companion. You're going to have more boats out there. That's not going to solve your problem. It's going to result in more boats being in a very crowded area. It's going to cost more in fuel. I don't think the thought that they will just drop out of the industry because only two on the boat, he hasn't said only two on the boat, but when you put 16 bushels as a limit on the boat, you're effectively saying it's two person at eight a bushel. So I don't think that's a productive solution to the area. To the issue of how to staff and what's going to happen if you limit the number of bushels per boat to 16. Again, it's not efficient and not productive for the industry because you want your industry to be as productive as possible. When I looked at some of the things that had been addressed with the hand tong areas, and I know this is an area that you may have looked at, but that is a healthy area for you. That is an area that could be opened to oystering by means other than hand tonguing. There is some science to support the fact that actually working those beds may promote the health of those beds. I understand that tonguing is the least invasive method of oyster harvesting, but by the same token, that technology is antiquated, as I've referenced, and there is some support, and I think others would speak to the fact that work in those beds may, in fact, promote health, and there's an abundance to be harvested in those areas that would promote the industry and promote our actual crop in Virginia. I did want to address another issue, and that is the issue of the transfer of licenses and the control dates that have been established, because I think there is potentially some economics there that may not be immediately apparent to the commission. When you have frozen the number of licenses that are available, no one can get new licenses, you've created a market for the transfer of the licenses. And there's an economic value to the transfer of the licenses. And the people that are going to pay to get a license are people that are going to want to make back their investment. They are going to be heavy users. They may be buying from people who are limited users, you know, who are not making a great deal of money on it and who are willing to sell. Maybe their age has caught up with them. Maybe other things have caught up with them. But when you create a situation where you've created a market for the transfers, you're bringing new people into the industry who are going to be heavy users. And I think your obligation here is to look at the oystermen that you have. And if you have to establish limits, maybe you look at the productivity reports and you look at the number of hours and you look at the harvest and you look at who's really invested in the industry and who's producing in the industry and who's not a casual user. But when you have transfer proposals, and I don't know the details of what is being proposed here, but when you talk about transferring to commercial fishermen, you're talking about creating a premium and bringing people in who are going to be heavy users. I would suggest that we should protect those who are active now and who are not transferring their licenses and take care of those folks. Now, there may be some exceptions for families. You know, if there's someone wants to give his son his license and there's some responsibility there within a family, maybe that's an exception. But when you take it broader than that, you are really bringing in new people, and I think you are losing the opportunity to address a way to control the number of licenses that are available. And I think you are assuming to some degree, when you look at those issues, that the market that you're creating is somehow going to be better for the industry, and I don't think that's true. I think the people who are here, from what I've heard, and I've sat through a number of things this morning, you got some really good people working in this industry, and they need to be supported. This is how they've made their livelihood. So I would suggest that when you're restricting license, you look at the reentry on new rather than eliminating those who came in after the control date. Those who came in after the control date and who have high levels of productivity have made a significant investment in what they're doing. They bought boats, they bought equipment, they're serious about what they're doing, and to eliminate them and bring in new people on the whim of whoever previously held the license may not be in the best interest of the industry. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. I appreciate your succinctness as well. Who's next? Please come forward.
Donna Melzer. I don't see a social, economical anything here, and it kind of worries me because as watermen, you all know that we change gear types. If the weather is not permitting that I'm thinking I'm not going to be able to oyster for the next month or so, I'm one of them that falls within the only 9 days in the public because the weather was changing. We went to go trapping. We go from trapping to harvesting oysters to fishing we've left for 2 years to go shrimping and ended up staying in Carolina. We had to take and change our license and everything and come back. And I'm concerned that you guys don't understand that when you go to rig a boat, you take 2 months off. You're telling me, take off your oysters rig and rig up for something else, completely have to redo your whole boat, and then come back and have to put your call board and your dredge line. You know, that's a lot of work on some boats. Some boats, it's real easy. The smaller boats, you can do that. But on a big boat, that can be real difficult. And I think it's important that you understand the hardship that it puts on watermen to have to change back and forth. However, when you see that you're doing something, you change and re-rig your whole boat, you can't have the call board to take and pull a net. It'll get kinked. You know, the net will catch it, and you're going to go overboard or something. And you can't use it to go trapping. You have to take and change the whole boat and what you're doing. And I worry that I wish that you guys could see what we do, because a four-day week with a Wednesday off, if the weather's bad on Wednesday, we can't work. But if the weather's bad on Thursday and we could have worked Wednesday, that would really sincerely impact us. If the ice is there and you've got a wood boat, you can't break through ice on a wood boat. Can't do it. You have to wait for somebody else to go out for you. There's things that impact us that don't allow us to fish on certain days. It's hard enough to go at certain times because of the tides. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Who's next? Please go forward, sir.
My name is Jeff Hammer. I'm a fisherman from the Eastern Shore. It looks like we're probably going to get stuck with one of these four, which I think pretty much everybody agrees with that. But the 4 days that everybody's talking about, if they could just be consecutive, either Monday through Thursday or Tuesday through Friday, it would be much easier. A lot of us, you know, are from out of town, staying over, and both ways. You guys, the Western Shore comes to us, and we come over here. And I've talked with Tommy Kellen this morning, and he's agreed to it. He says he doesn't have a problem with just, you know, taking off Monday or taking off. I think he wants us working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or maybe it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. It doesn't matter as long as there are four consecutive days. It would really help us a lot. Something to think about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hammer.
Ken Carr. 4 days, I don't think we should be put on a certain day that we have to take off. Just put us on a four-day work if you're going to put us on it. And if you have one bad day, you can take that day off or pick the worst day of the week, and you won't really lose on that. But that would be a different route on the four-day. And as far as my opinion on the James River shaft-tongue oysters, and I haven't shaft-tongued, but I've been around and have shaft-tongued in the past, we don't need no limit on the shaft-tongue. It's a plenty of oysters down James River to supply the whole state of Virginia in the shaft-tongue area. They aren't used, and it's no end of the season was great. The first of this season is going to be great. There's no reason to have a limit on James River shaft-tongue. Up the bay, Nominee, where it is a limit, most of that is planted seed that gets planted from James River. I could see why you got a limit on it, because you got a limited amount of oysters to harvest. And it's going to be tough this year because a lot of people up here, other than the buyers, you got the Gulf to compete with this year. It's been down there before. But BP's been paying them guys the last 5 years good money. Now they've got to work. That's going to be a major impact on our price, along with the limit. It's going to end up, let me add something else to it. Our licenses, the $190 fee, the $300 cost, the agriculture license, which we aren't agricultural, and all that adds up to $500-some or better. It's, y'all are making it tough on us. And I come down to a lot of replenishing meetings and a lot of other meetings, and I can say that they don't give me the time of day on what I do say, and that's why I haven't been back to them in the past. And I've done as good this year on my private ground as I've ever done, and I've worked it. Didn't have to reseed it. James River doesn't have to be reseeded. It's a natural river for working. The more you work it, the more you cultivate them shelves, the more they strike. The shaft-tongue area needs to be worked a whole lot more. It'll strike up. The oysters won't be snappy. The buyers will like the oysters a lot better because the markets will like them because they're not as snappy. And there'll be more of a cup and more where the sales will be better. And it's going to be a tough year. And if all the money that was supposed to have been used for replenishing, some of the seed would have been planted back in Rappahannock and Potomac like it was in the past. The last year we had a market boat, the O.A. Bloxham, We planted 65,000 bushels out of Pianki tank ourselves. That was Jennings Burton, James Ward. It was much as 8 market boats up there that planted the same thing. That's a lot of oysters. Way over 500,000 bushels of seed going up the river. What has replenishing done? Give all that replenishing away, and the buyers give them a bushel of seed back to put back overboard. How is the commercial industry going to come ahead when stuff like that's happened? Then a lot of the major oyster rocks up there have been destroyed by Chesapeake Bay Foundation. You put concrete on them. You build all kinds of things. There were rocks that we could work before that it'd take a bulldozer to get to the oysters now. And that hasn't had the best, that hasn't had the effect on the production of our oysters. Mother Nature gave us our oysters. It didn't come from the replenishing from them. And Rappahannock and Potomac aren't a striking river. Those rivers need seed. And to get everybody back working, we need to start moving seed from James River, which will give all these guys that we are taking out of work and limiting and get oysters there where we can work again and give us work down in James River. It'll get the whole system going back. You need to go back and not be 100% agriculture and have a little bit of respect for the commercial people and replenish some, replenish the rocks in those rivers. Pianki tanks are, that's a powerful striking river. It's just as good as James River. Little river up on up off of Reedville, that's the same way. With a little bit of common sense and that, we could have the best oyster business in the world. But it's limited. Thank you.
Okay. I was going to ask about the options that are before the commission.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of those?
Yeah, I do. It's a tough problem. And I'm glad I'm not in the shoes of some of these guys, of y'all and the watermen, to solve the problem. And years ago when I was going to the replenishing meeting, I got fired. I never did join the replenishing thing. I don't know when I got on the board. But anyhow, Maryland wanted 2,000 bushels of seed.
I just asked about options that are before the commission. Let's not stray
off into
Maryland
issues. All right, let's go back to that. I don't think... So the daily thing should be done. Leave that 5 days. And it's a lot of things that I would say, but I really don't have written down. And I wasn't planning on speaking. I was just going to come here and listen today.
Okay.
But I think somebody has to get up here and speak for us, and we need somebody to represent us. Yeah. We got to have somebody to come here and speak for the watermen instead of coming here and defending ourselves all the time. And that's a major problem in this situation.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Carr.
My name is Mark Brown.
Mr. Brown?
I'm an oysterman. Mr. Bull, you know who I am.
Yep.
Commission members, y'all were all brought here today, and Mr. Wesson has brought y'all a proposal to come up with. Y'all don't have to agree with Mr. Wesson. Y'all can come up with your own proposal. Now, I'm going to be unlike any of the other speakers that have got up here except Kent. Kent was a little nervous, and I'm nervous too. I'm not going to lie about it. I don't think there should be any restrictions put on us, not right at this time. In the last 3 years in the James River, now, I don't go anywhere but the James River. I start when the season starts, and, I mean, I've worked on my boat. I missed some days last year, but I'm going to still fall underneath the guidelines at Mr. Wesson if that's what y'all choose. I think most all of these watermen that are in here today, now Kent just said he wants somebody representing them, so I'm up here, I'm going to speak for them because I know this is how most of them feel. Now, some of them might not agree with me, and some of them are going to agree with me, but the majority of them are going to be on my side. I think it should be just like it was last year, the seasons and everything. I don't think y'all should make any changes at all. I think y'all are, he's rushing the judgment. The production in the James River alone in the last 3 years, I went from catching my limit. My son's young, just got out of high school a few years ago, and he's been working with me, and I picked up different ones to work with me. We've gone from having to work till 11 o'clock to catch our limit, to 10 o'clock, to 9 o'clock, and then last year it was a many a day. I was done at 8:30. So there's nothing wrong with the oyster industry. They're crying wolf before they need to cry wolf. There shouldn't be any limit, And I mean, as far as that goes, that's the way it should stay. Most of these people are going to agree with me, and I know y'all are going to vote on something, but I would hope that y'all would have the intestinal fortitude, you know, to vote your conscience, not just vote what staff recommends. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Who's next? Please come forward.
Lori Pruitt, and I won't be long, but I'm agreeing with the gentleman that was just up there. I was going to say that, you know, this is our livelihood. I understand that some people may not understand that, but I have three children in the back there, and that's how they get fed, and that's how we pay bills, and that's what we do. And I don't think that there should be any setbacks because we haven't had any information showing otherwise. I mean, we've had two good years. Let's go until we have to sit and talk about other options. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next? Mr. Green.
Members of the board, Commissioner, my name is Richard Green. I got a little something, another different angle I would like to put on what's being said. And it, I know it hasn't been considered. I've brought it up before in different meetings. And it's the fact that we've got ground that can be open, that has been closed. We had, in the James River alone, there's over 600 acres that we used to scrape. And it was taken away and put back into the Hantong area. This was viable, good bottom. And in the Hantong areas, they can't use all of it because of the depth of the water. And most of this ground is still open, and this could probably put a lot more boats back to work and wouldn't even probably cause any problem at all, you know, as far as the quantity of boats working. Rappahannock, over 40% that I'm told, and a pretty reliable source, is in sanctuaries. 40% of the productive oyster bottom. Why such a large quantity? Why ain't this ground open back up and allowing these boats to work? You will not be having the problem you're having. It's good to have some sanctuaries maybe, but even to a sanctuary needs to be worked. Them oysters aren't going to lay down and be perfect forever. They're going to die. The bottom is going to become unproductive, sludge, everything else is going to get on it. The place needs to be cleaned up. Good storms, hurricanes can come and wipe out every rock, every oyster, and every river. These grounds and things need to be worked for what's in sight. And a good productive bottom and work it in a reasonable manner and allow the boats to be spread out would be a very good idea.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Bill Bailey from Sykes's, and I've seen a lot of the charts up there, but not much of it mentions Pocomoke Sound. And Mr. Wilson, Pocomoke Sound does have a dredge
season.
Is it the same year?
All right. And your
Pocomoke
Sound.
I mean, there's two different bodies of water, so
I'll
look at it together.
Mr. Bailey, please address the commission.
Well, I got their figures. The Area 9 and 10 was opened up 2 years ago. The first time it had been opened up, what, 8 or 10 years before? And we caught 24,000 bushels there and in two little areas in 2 months. We left when they closed Area 9 down. We left, me and several other boats left there 8:30 that morning with 24 bushels of oysters. And they got to still be there because adjacent grain, the private grain, their oysters haven't died. And we had a tremendous amount of spats. So, I mean, I don't know the reasoning for not opening up. It's not even mentioned. And furthermore, his own chart shows everything going up, 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 and all of a sudden we're in dire straits. I don't understand it. And what happens on the private grind, I don't know. But all I'm asking, consider opening them places up. That's over $1 million worth of oysters in a tiny boat, 250 people. I can't speak for James River or Rappahannock. I haven't worked James River in years. I haven't been to Rappahannock, but I'm talking about Pocomoke Sound. I don't see the reason for not opening up. He says 2 years down the road, it looks good. So if we work that this year, we're not working it no more until two more years. So if it looks, I don't see how we're hurting anything.
Okay.
That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. Thank you. Someone else? Please come forward, sir.
Now, my name is Fred Linton. I'm also from Sykes. And what Mr. Bailey was talking about is that Mr. West said something about open rotating the rocks every year. Ever since back in the 60s, most of us had to leave home to make a living. And back in the 70s and 80s, we had pollution to come up in Pocomoke Sound. They covered all these rocks that we're talking about we'd like to see open. Well, then again, we had to leave and go home, leave home again and go to work. And we have oysters right in our backyard now, and now we can't. We still talk about not opening them. And we don't understand that. Why, you know, I don't disagree with some of the things that they're talking about that we need to preserve. But all at the same time, these rocks, like they said, if they're not worked, they're going to die. And we worked in 2013. It was all the oysters you want. I think one man said, when they come out there, the most oysters they've ever seen in the state of Virginia. But yet, I can't understand why these rocks should not be open. And why should we have to go away from home when we got our own oysters? Why should our season be open in December when we should be open in November where everybody could work their own rocks? Are you going away from home if you can catch your limit at home? I'm not. And I'm just tired of going away from home all the time. I'm getting older and older and older. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Someone else? Mr. West. It's good to see you, sir.
Commissioner, Board members, J.C. West, full-time waterman for 52 years. I feel like all these boys in here and myself and all the commercial fishermen in the state of Virginia, they've been commercial fishing 12 months out the year all their lives. I feel like they should get their license and go to work.
Hi, I'm Richie Turner. A little nervous here. I'm going to speak on behalf of the young ones coming in. I went on the two-year delay program 4 years ago. I spent 2 years waiting to get a waterman card. And, made good money in the car business. But I said, this is what I like to do. It's good for my mind. It's going to be good for my boys growing up. And now, I'm concerned reading all this, I might not have a license. I've worked for two straight years now, started January the 1st of 2013, and I think it's a few other young watermen in here that got the same problem. I know one of my cousins started last year, and we worked hard. We worked all winter to make our living, pay our mortgage payments. You know, I'm ready to go back to work this year, so I pay my house payments for the next 12 months. That's what we do. You guys have hard decisions to make, and I understand it. We got oysters we want to live so my children can harvest them oysters. The little kids back there in the back corner, all of them. How do we make the right decision? Every one of us got sleep at nighttime. How do we make the right decision to do it? How do we keep going forward? I've invested $10,000, $15,000 in licenses and stuff, getting just hook and line licenses, this, that, and the other, just so I keep working and making my living through the summer. We're here at oyster season again. We're a month away, and there's no decisions that have been made all year long. This could have been figured 8 months ago, and I know you guys have hard decisions, but it's hard for everybody in this room. Every one of these men and women sitting here, they're struggling to make sure they're going to have a living this winter. How can we stop the monotony of it all and just make it right? So we ain't never one of us got to do it, and I understand you're trying to figure it out, but how do we do it? There have been watermen for how many years? 60, 80, 100 years? How do we stop it now? I don't know. But for these young ones and stuff, for them not to have a chance to go through, there won't be a future. So I don't know what else to say, but thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Mr. Porter.
Commissioner, members, my name is Don Porter. I'm from Sykes's. We've got three rocks up there. It's 9, 10, and 11. They've got oysters on them. We are to at least be able to try to dredge these rocks, and it's a management area. If there's nothing there, shut it down. Secondly, the four-day, the Wednesday deal, we can't, I mean, that's going to be hard. The boys have to go away from home. They're going to have to sit there aboard of a boat or in a hotel room on Wednesday and, you know, to spend money and not be able to work. So Tuesday to Friday or Monday to Thursday, either one would be fine. Second thing is the control. I know we can't work less than 8 bushels per man. That's something we got to consider, too. I know there's people in here that don't want people eliminated, and I understand that. I was on the Shellfish Committee. It was hard. But all I can say is the ones that are doing it cannot do it for less than 8 bushels a day. There's no way we can do it for 4 or 6. I've got 2 people in my family who's lost license over this deal. But hey, you know, if I can catch 8 bushels, I can make a living. I don't think anybody here wants to go less than 8 bushels. So whatever you decide today, make sure we get our 8 bushels, at least, hopefully. And we would appreciate you all thinking about these three rocks. Get them open. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter.
Surely there's someone else. Thank you for not disappointing me.
I'm here.
Good. Let's
hear
from
you. My name is Alan Smith. Been a warm all my life. Yes, we got 3 on the boat. And now you want to take one off. All that's going to do is shove us to ourselves. Hire another man. So you're not trying to solve a problem. You're messing up a problem. You put more into it, just like the dredge license last year and the year before that. All right, we've been dredging for a long time. One set of dredge lights per boat, but it's always been 2 or 3 on the boat. All right, last year he come say, all right, y'all got to have dredge license. So the other 2 had to buy a dredge license for the boats. So y'all add more to the fleet. You know what I'm saying? And Jane Rubber, plenty of Austin Jane Rubber, all up while we don't even use to work. So I just hold clean deep water light. All you want, but it's not being worked. They let it lay there. It's getting snappy. It needs to be worked. It dredged or however y'all want to move it, but it's got to be done. I appreciate you guys' help.
Thanks, sir. Floor's open. Welcome, Mr. Heath.
Yeah, I'm Kenny Heath. I'm Eastern Shore. Sounds like to me there's a lot of closed area that should be opened up so everybody can work. James River, right behind it. And Sykes's, or Pocomoke Town. I don't know. I hate to see anybody get put out of work. As I've been working on the water all my life. I've had trout taken away. Every time you get into something, they keep taking it away from you. And when you take something away from somebody, you know what happens. It goes down to the next thing. Everybody gets into that, and then that's a problem. So I just hate to see anybody get put out, and I think they ought to leave it like it is for this year and open some of them closed areas up and let some people work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Anyone else? Anyone? Going once. Please come forward.
Brian Hubbard, Commercial Water. One thing that hadn't been brought up, I know in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, there was a 10 bushel limit per person. And we didn't have a problem catching that. And now there's an 8 bushel limit. And it's even better than it is before. And I'm like the other fellow said, what's going on? I mean, things are going really good. Why are we here discussing this? I think it should be left the same and see how things go. I think things are going to be better than ever. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard.
Name's Carl Sutterholm. A big question I've had since y'all started doing this, y'all have your regulated areas, your zones that you open up here and everywhere else. I don't understand where y'all think that is what's best, to open up these little spots here and there. And then you put, this ain't even everybody that's out there working, and you got all these boats working these little spots that you dug up, pulled to pieces, yanked apart, and gone out. Now you open another little spot here or there. And the year that the hurricane hit the Gulf, y'all opened everything up at one go around. Your bunch of sacks have stayed up there working. We stayed up York River, the ones up James River, the ones up right behind it. Nothing got dug to pieces. It got rolled and worked, got your big stuff off of it, spread the little stuff out. And guess what's happened? Y'all showing the numbers. It grew and grew. Put it on the table. But you sit there and you put it on small spots and it gets dug up. It's just like when you had the crab drugs. You fleet the boats, hit the mud slough, kiss the limit goodbye in a couple hours. So all I'm trying to say is, well, y'all pack everybody in these small spots. You're not going to help it at all. I don't care what limit you put on it, because when they hit them, it's just going to get dug to pieces. So if you open it up and let people move around and work in open general areas, it's a whole lot better than putting them in one spot and digging it up.
Anyone else? Anyone else? There's room at the microphone. I'll give a last call here before I close the public hearing and send it to the commission for a decision. Okay, seeing no other public testimony here, the public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and a decision. I want you all to know that we all take this very seriously. And I think you know that this is not an easy decision. Dr. Wesson, before we get into this with the commission, is there anything else that you think the commission needs to know to move forward here?
Well, I mean, I can, a few of those things that were brought up, I can.
Yeah, go ahead. If you can address them quickly and succinctly,
yeah,
please.
I can. I mean, we've been dealing with this. The third man thing has been an issue for the Shellfish Committee, batted back and forth for since probably 2011, and pretty much they don't think most of the third men are picked up extra, and they don't think there's a lot of likelihood that a bunch of new boats are going to show up based on that, especially once we have entry control. Now, if we're not going to do entry control, then we might as well just stay at the three. I mean, three per boat, because if anybody can come in, it doesn't really make any difference on that. There is no science on working the bottom showing improvement. I mean, it is, if working the bottom improved our productivity, our rotation areas ought to be the best things that's ever been done, because it you work one area, then you don't touch it for 2 years.
Hold on a second. We've done so well up to now. Let's continue to be civil. Let's keep the comments to yourselves, please. Let the commission do its work.
There have been a lot of studies in both Maryland and Virginia on the fact of whether just moving shells around has any impact, and it has never been shown to do that. And our rotation areas show that there's no correlation between Area 6 being open, having a better set the following year than it had the year that it wasn't worked. Transfers, whether or not we have transfers in this, that's up to the commission. It was the waterman that asked for the transfers to be able to have ways that, should we limit it, entry, that they would have, young people could get in. Wednesday off, it was picked in conversations with a lot of people, because the majority of those oysters, the oysters that we use, are shucked product. And if you take a day off Monday or Friday, then basically you go 3 days without product. And the way it works with the HGBs and everything now, you pay those guys to work a day even if you don't have any shuck product. So the chances of them being days with nothing to do were pretty big, which could be a pretty much of an economic drain on the trucking houses. I mean, the ones that I talked to said that, you know, if they had a second choice, it would be Friday, but the middle of the week is the better one for maintaining continuity in their workforce, because somebody has to use those orchards once they're caught. When you talk about Jim, extending into...
One second. Mr. Zedron has a question.
Let me ask you a question about that. What's the problem with letting the watermen pick one of the days? So, in other words, if they had a bad weather day, they could do that.
Because bad weather days are already factored in. And we know every year you're going to have a certain number of bad weather days. So if we worked every day, you're going to lose one. So you would only get any benefit by taking one day for certain off every week. And we're only asking for this pre-limited entry control. It come January 1st, if we go into the where you know that that which the fishery you have is the fishery you have, then you go back to the 5 days, 8 bushels per man as it was before. This is just a stopgap to get us through when we have a bigger fishery than we need.
Mr. Zedron, here the other question. The other answer to your question is law enforcement would be impossible to tell who's supposed to work on what day, in which case then it would be a five-day work.
Well, I thought that would kind of fall in with the reporting, because the people do reporting, they could check and see on a computer who if you work 5 days or 4 days or 3 days.
For which day they would take off, that would be a very difficult thing for law enforcement.
Okay.
And as far as expanding into other areas, right now 85% of our harvest comes from hand scrape and dredges. Only 15% of our harvest is left for all the other gear types to have something to catch. And it's not a very good solution to try to solve over-efficiency with one gear by going into other areas and just taking more, because that takes it away from other user groups. And we have nowhere close to 40% of any area set aside as sanctuary. We have areas that have big buffers around them in the Rappahannock, but in those areas there will only be one little reef that we're protecting, so it's not an area that would be productive to be worked in. For the area 9 and 10 in Pocomoke, we did not get that into the recommendation, so if the commission wants me to go up and check those areas, come back in September with meeting on those two areas. I had intended to do that this past week, but it was windy and we had a breakdown on boats, so we couldn't go. But I'll show you what we're looking at.
Again.
I actually brought those ones to look at. These areas up here are the ones they're talking about, way up in the sound above the management area that we opened up in 2013. And so this was public ground number 9. And when we opened those two areas up in 2013, we had really big hopes for them. And the thought was, we'll go harvest them, we'll come in and replenish them, and we'll start a rotation up there. But when it came around to replenishment time the following season, everybody was concerned about putting shells too close to Maryland, so we would be enticing people to come in on our ground, so we did not go and reshell. And the problem with not going up there and reshelling is that this is what we see. I mean, in 2013, we had 6.5 markets per meter up there, and now we're down to 2.5. Or two in that area, and this one we had about 3, and we're down to 2. So So we saw a big drop-off. We've not seen a lot of spat set. We had a good spat set in that year, but we've not seen any spat set since then up there. So yes, there are a few stocks up there, but if you look at these areas, I mean, one of our concerns is that we have all these private grounds in here and that they're next to, and if we certainly would not want to open those two without at least offering those leaseholders time to comment on whether they wanted all that harvesting right next to them again. So I'd be happy to go look at those areas again and come back with those two for a separate item, you know, come next commission meeting if we want to. And, you know, to say that this thing popped up, it hadn't popped up. We've been working with the Shellfish Committee since January and February on this issue because we knew it was coming, and, you know, we have put a lot of time into it. And, you know, when you start doing bushel limits and you have an unlimited fishery, then bushel limits really mean nothing as long as more people can pile in. And it's the reverse for the good of the fishery, in that once you limit the fishery and things get better, say we are seeing better spat sets now and we've got our numbers of people under better control, then we can look at going back to 10 bushels 2 years from now. But as long as people can come and go, then there's no way you'll ever get out of eight. I mean, we're pretty much stuck there, and we have to either limit the days or something. So happy to answer any other questions, but that's kind of ones that I heard.
Yeah. Mr. Erskine.
Jim, there was something else that was brought out, I guess, that I heard. It was in the deeper water area of the James River Hantong, opening some of that.
It's really not very deep there, and that area just across that line is where a lot of the hantongers go for pretty oysters in the fall. It's where they round up the best, and I think hantongers would be very upset if they lost that area.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Haney.
Question, another area we haven't spoken about, but SMAC had voted or had made a motion to approve opening Deep Rock for 2 weeks in March, the hand scrape, but we haven't seen any of that.
Well, I mean, that's our only Patentong area. We have a very small Patentong fishery that works there, and if dredges go in for 2 weeks, it'll be done for.
Even if they went in after the Patentong?
It'll be, from then on, it'll be gone, because after we had the dredge season there about in 2005 or 6, it took us until the past year or two that they actually started catching there like they were catching before. I mean, the efficiency of a hand scrape and a dredge is so, they are just so efficient. If you were going to say let the number of hand scrapers go in there that the same amount as we had of patent owners, which is just a few that work in there, you probably wouldn't notice it. But when they can all pile in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, a lot of these areas like the York River and stuff are pretty much shot in 2 weeks. And the Deep Rock Patentong area is so small, you're only talking about 40 acres there. So the Patentongers that work there get a whole season out of those 40 acres. So.
Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Tankard.
Would you, you know, we've seen a lot of people invest in this recently. Would you remind us of the history of where we were in, say, 2006, that graph? I mean, it seems to me, what were we catching? And is it wild harvest?
I mean, when somebody mentioned 2011, I mean, we were at 350 back then. So, I mean, that's it's been a big. I mean, the harvest we were talking about back then in 2005, you know, we had gotten over 100,000 bushels, and we had less than 300 hand scrapers.
Yeah,
and, you know, about 120 dredgers.
Right.
Oh,
my God. So, Jim, do I have that number right? Mm-hmm. Are you saying the number of participants has more than doubled in the last 10 years?
Oh,
it's way more than double.
Yeah, that's right. It's triple. I mean, you can look at the, I mean, it's missed. The reason I don't use this one anymore is because last year we made everybody get a license so we would get a good count. And so we were at basically 300 boats in 2011. Now we're at 900 licenses that reported harvest.
Okay. I've asked. I've been polite. I've begged you all to be very civil and to keep the comments down as we do our work here. If it's going to keep up, I'm going to ask the Marine police officers to start removing people. So let's keep the comments to yourselves.
So it's been a, I mean, we actually have, we did some, and I didn't bring any of those, but Joe Grist did a really good job on showing the growth of the fishery that we showed to the FMAC, how fast it had grown. A lot of transfers, a lot of people that came in that, you know, said they'd been working and got exceptions. Very big run on exceptions for 2 or 3 years.
That's true. Mr. Cedron.
I don't know if I got this right or not. This is what I'm hearing. A long time ago, you'd had one, say, a captain. He had his license, and he had and the other two people on the boat, did they have to have a license too?
No.
They did not have to have a license, and that's why I don't like to use this figure because we transitioned away from that. But since 2011... we've captured, they all had to have a commercial card first. Then when we got the user fee, and that's why we've zeroed into those past 2 years when they had the user fee, everybody that got a limit had to have a user fee. And then the past year we made them have to have a user fee and a gear license. So they're not totally comparable, but through mandatory reporting, they report their helpers. Even in those years we had nothing but the commercial cards. From 2011 on, we've got very good data on who was on that boat. And when we did the effort control studies, we used that helper data. We did not use their license data.
All right, so here's the next question. So back in 2004 or 2 or whatever like that, you had the captain with his license. You had three people on the boat. Now, today, I guess we had 2011. Yeah, 2011, or even today, you showed 900 people with a license. But here's the question: is there any more boats, or is that just merely because you make everybody on boat have a license?
That's not the boats. That's not the number of boats.
No, what I'm saying is, I mean, when I'm sitting up here looking, I hear, you know, we had 100 and something down there in 2002, and now we got 900, but what I'm thinking is maybe we had 900 back in 2002 because. Is that right? Okay.
No. I mean, we did not have all those. And we really don't have a comparable, but it. I mean, the boat counts back then were in the hundreds. We actually did some years that we did boat counts. So.
And today, what do we got?
Now we have more than 100 in each area as at one time.
Okay.
I mean, as an example, you know, 270 people showing harvest in Tangier Sound in that area that was open when that was the only area. So, and majority of them are two to the boat as a. In some of the records I looked at on from some of the reports at the shucking houses, it was about 65% two per boat, like 10% won, and like 25% three people on the boat. And the problem with the three people on the boat is that those are the ones when we get in and start looking at the damage to the rocks, is that if they're the ones that have to stay there longer and work as the season works down to get their limits. You know, they'll stay the full time.
There are other questions from the commission?
Yeah, I have one more. I just want to see that graph of the oyster harvest. How many bushels on the last decade?
And the blue is what we're looking at there.
Nope. Nope. No, you cannot. The public hearing has been closed.
But you allowed him to testify evidence again, which gives the right to the public for rebuttal.
It does not. You have additional questions, Mr. Tankard?
Mr. Ballard, down there.
Mr. Ballard.
Do we have any data showing a correlation between historical spat set and harvest numbers? Because we're showing the harvest, but what we're not looking at is what was the resource in those years. And I think the impetus of all this is poor spat sets. But what I'm curious about is, do we have any scientific studies?
That I showed last time. You want to see that again?
I'd like to see it again, okay. Yeah.
This is the area that we had open last year. I mean, and the blue is a spat in Tangier. So in that area, we had about almost 10 per meter markets. Where this is what we're going into this year. This is the number of markets, about less than two for Tangier.
And the blue area is spat?
Blue is spat, yeah.
Okay.
So you can see we had a decent spat set in 2010 in this area. And, you know, and had some, but just because you have spat set doesn't mean it goes into the fishery necessarily. But you know, we had a real good one back here, gave us these higher numbers right there that we had seen, and then, but most years it's been down. Again, this is the area that we're going into. This is the culch, which is declining, which is not an indication of the oysters going down. And you know, we've put a lot of shells back there this year, so hopefully we'll bounce that back up.
Can you tell them how you got that conclusion?
Ms. Melzer, the public hearing is closed. This is discussion between staff and the commission.
Kind of the flip side of that is the, in 2012, we got the big set in the Greater Comico. A lot there, and you see how many smalls there are here, and they're going to go into the fishery. That was last fall, so there's a big group of smalls going into the fishery for this year in the Greater Comico. So that area we're not really worried about. This is where we were last year in Area 1, which we had about six or seven market oysters per meter. And you see that in this area, we did have the good sets in 10 and 12, and we had quite a bit of smalls coming. And so, you know, we had a good season there. There were all these smalls that matriculated and grew into the market oysters in 2014. And that's similar to what we're seeing in Area 5 this year. We, you know, in Area 5 did not get a big set in 2012, but we still have quite a bit of smalls that have come on through, and so we have a good amount of oysters per meter. The problem in the Rappahannock is just that the area is small. and similar to the Area 3, you know, we have about the same amount of market orchards that we had last year, but again, that's smaller again than the other area. So what we come at in all these, it's all based on both how what the size is and what the standing stocks are per meter, so that you multiply up to the total area. Mobjack, you know, we didn't have a lot of markets area last year, but there's a whole bunch of smalls coming in the fishery, and they're there. We went and checked them last week. There are a lot of markets on Mobjack. It's just that Mobjack is very small when you compare it to the area, rotation area that was open the year before and the year before that. It was in the York River. So, I mean, all these areas are a combination of what's there and how big they are to project what the harvest will be.
Mr. Frantz.
Yes, Jim, it's just an observation I was making. You showed the Pocomoke-Tangier area, and it was like two markets per meter. And then the upper sand, that's 9 and 10 or 10 or 11.
About two.
It was two or two and a half. It was more oysters market size there than it was in what is going to be open. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is the issue of why we can't get that upper area open?
Well, the biggest issue is the fact that I didn't show the, you know, is that we did come before the shellfish committee and talk about that area, but here's the biggest area up there, is that we don't have very much culch up there to start with in 2013, but you can see we're down now to the amount of culch on nine. I mean, basically, the oysters that are there, we put them in a liter cup. That's the entire culch. There's nothing left after that.
So after you
so once they're gone,
bottoms, nothing there.
They're gone. So, I mean, the question is, do you want, I mean, and, you know, it's that question. Do you want one more shot at it and be done? If you're not going to replant it, I mean, I still think this is an ideal area to replant, because even though we do have the poaching issues, it, you know, it's one of those areas that is close to home, and there was a good reason for us to replant these areas, but it was, the poaching was so bad in the meeting, they said that we, they said, don't plant shells back here, plant them further down the sound. That's what we did. And so the result is that the shell's all gone. So, I mean, that's why I say, if I want to come back to you and add those two areas, you know, I can tell you it's only going to be a one deal, one time shot, but we will go look at them one more time.
If you would.
Mm-hmm. One more question.
Mr. Frantz.
Is there still poaching going on in these areas?
The watermen tell me yes, and it's the problem is that the buoys up there marking the line are just horrible. I mean, it's there used to be nice big signs and posts, and you could get a sight line on them, and now most of them are gone, and all that's left are the little small buoys, and if you're not right on top of them, you can't see where they are, so it's easy for the mineral guys to come across. And if you remember, one came for the commission that had been doing that just 2 or 3 months ago. But I mean, there are others, and apparently it's a big issue, and I'm sure it is a big issue.
How do we fix it?
I'd certainly like to see our guys get a chance at it. Mm-hmm. How do we fix it?
Well, I had actually talked to Ben, and I've been trying to call Maryland to see, you know. Probably can't get it done this year, but somehow we got to get those posts back up there so that you can see it from a distance. Because, I mean, law enforcement, by the time law enforcement gets close enough to see that line, then they're long gone. So
there have been some poachers in that area that have been charged and convicted by the Marine Police, and their licenses were taken by this commission.
Yep. But it is hard to do it when you can't see the line.
Other questions from the commission? Ms. Haney.
Shaftong limit. The Shaftong limit?
Yeah.
How important, and did that go through SMAC, or where did that come from?
It comes from just the fact that we don't know the unintended consequences if we go into an entry system of where where people are going to go. And the limit we set that I, you know, I came up with, I went to Mandarin reporting, I looked at how much the boat's coming in, and it was nobody that came in with more than 36. So, I mean, so I basically said three people divide 36 by three, and you got 12 per man. So we kind of set it at basically a level that is as high as we're seeing right now, but just not to let anything get out of control. And the way it is right now, in comparison to everywhere else, I mean, you can have call boys working up there with no licenses because there's no limit. So you can have one guy with a license getting 36.
Other questions from the commission?
I guess I have a couple.
You know, yes, ma'am.
This is all predicated on, I guess, your surveying the various rocks of a potential, well, you don't think potential, a definite decrease in oyster harvest. How bad are we looking at if we do nothing? Are we talking about returning back to the 90s when there was...
No, I mean, we're talking about areas being done in a week or two. Certainly areas being overworked, just the culch itself that we pay so much money for being damaged. And you know, that adding more instability to the fishery that are there, because we have this laden group out there that it, both the ones that aren't catching very much as well as these ones that are not in the fishery at all. I mean, we have people in our office every single day that, you know, saying they're going to get into oysters. And it's the efficiency of these gear types is that these areas are. And once you get down that there's nothing left on these areas, then the temptation is to move on to adjacent areas when nobody's looking.
The other question I had another question.
Yes, sir.
Just for my clarification, this limited entry proposal that we have, that is not using the control date that was set?
Basically, that is not using the control date. We've allowed those people that came in after control date to fall where they fall. And as an example, just on those tables that we had, like this one for the hand scrape. And when you look at the ones, there's 540 people, there are about 60 people there that came in after the control date.
So basically, like the young guy that came up here and talked to, he was in this fishery.
Yeah, he
would be.
Yeah,
not he's
like what he's saying, he's in.
Yeah.
All right,
that was my question.
It was pretty smart, Jim. It was pretty smart.
Yeah.
Mr. Erskine.
Jim, I appreciate all your hard work and the presentation. I also appreciate everybody's comments. Obviously, by the sheer numbers in the room and out in the hallway, this is a pretty important issue. But I don't want it to be lost on the fact that it's important to this board as well. SMAC met on multiple occasions for several hours in this room for the preceding 6 or 8 months to work on this issue. I'd reiterate what Jim said, is that there was a motion that was passed, and I think I discussed it last month for this board. It was 9-3 for status quo. There were several members that felt, that some effort reduction was necessary. I think one striking thing in the last meeting we had, I believe in July, with SMAC was the licenses that we talked an awful lot about, like these numbers, could not be implemented until January 1, 2016. And we did less discussion on some of the bushel reductions or days of the week or, you know, number of licenses on a vessel and thus. So it was disheartening to know that we were going to start the season October 1 of 2015 and not be able to work on any of the license reductions, because there's clearly hundreds of licenses that aren't reporting any harvest, which doesn't go to reduce the effort on how many bushels are coming in. But if you were to look at 1 to 9 days on the water, or 10 to 14, or I guess what you're suggesting, less than 20, I'd venture a guess as to all the people in this room have been on the water a whole lot more than 20 days total for the season. So those are the people that need to stay in the fishery. And I think there was consensus, even though we didn't pass a motion, about these licenses that were not being used, period, or were harvesting very little or spending very few days out there on the water, should not be in the fishery, if that's what we're talking about. I guess my question, finally, is are the way this falls with meetings here at the board, we have September, October, and a December meeting. And a number of people that made public comments said status quo was their recommendation or their suggestion. If we were to wait until, is it possible to wait until December, would we have any of the preliminary harvest reports from October and maybe November to make a decision?
Reporting does not come in that fast, because October would come in.
Licenses go on sale December 1.
Yeah. Yeah, licenses.
Okay, so licenses go on sale December 1 for the following season.
Right.
So, okay, that answered my question. All right, thank you.
Anyone else on the commission? Mr. Ziefer.
If we implement this, and then as the season goes on, you find, the staff finds, that the harvest is better or than we are looking at it right now, is there anything to keep us from changing your plan and maybe, going up on a bushel limit or whatever to kind of help out the people?
Well, as it's in place now, if we do the effort control, it does go back to 5 days come January 1st. So that automatically happens. We've been doing the stock assessment for a long time now, and we know it in just a few grabs on all these areas what we're going to see, and it's heartening that as much as we've abused it, that Spatz looks like it's pretty good baywide right now, which means that 2 years from now, that we may be, if we get the fishery under control, we may actually be able to lengthen seasons or have more bushels per person. I mean, the 500 and something that we're at, 541 is still really high, but maybe some natural attrition, and we may come back next year and want to tweak on this some more. But the fact is, when it's open, We know what's out there, unless we've had a major die-off and it's worse than what we think. We know the good side of it going into it right now. We've been through these rotations in all these areas. We're in the third rotation for the three-year ones. We're in the fifth rotation for the two-year ones. So it's pretty much easy for us to tell what we got out there.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions from the commission?
I have one more.
Mr. Tacker.
Would you speak to, I didn't really, the transfers, I didn't, couldn't understand the logic of Ms. Sullivan's economics on that. Would you just kind of go through the dynamics of what transfer looks like and how it takes place?
Well, there is no doubt that once you shut it down and you allow transfers, that there will be a monetary value for these licenses, and that we've seen that in crabs and everything else. And if we didn't want to start the transfer system for a year, it'd be fine with staff, as that we were responding to the SMAC. They were very concerned that we keep this so that as people age and young ones come available, that there are ways for them to keep the fishery healthy. And so that's why we put the transfer system right in from starting January 1st. I mean, if we wanted to lay that for a year, If we think that's going to be a big problem, that's not a big deal. But most of the warmen I've talked to were interested in being able to transfer.
And one follow-up question, if I could. What is the current price of a transferred license? Do you have any thought on that?
What that would be. I mean, initially, it might not be that much. But, I mean, the nice thing about transferring, when there's not a lot to catch, it won't be but so much. So.
Okay. So follow up again. I'm sorry. No big economic barrier to transfer.
No more than it being a plumber or anything else that you had to get into the licenses and things like that. So.
All right,
Mr. Frantz.
Yeah, speaking to the commission, you know, one thing that really scares me about this is, in my area, is a diminished oyster area anyway. The tributaries of the Potomac and Upper Rappahannock and stuff like that. And as a oysterman, as a waterman, they need as many irons in the fire as they can get. And sometimes people in my area, they may hand scrape maybe just 1 month out of the year. They might not get that 20 days in. But they need that as part of their waterman's portfolio to keep on working, to transfer to oystering for a month and maybe go back to gillnet and get ready to go to crabbing. But it all works in their circle of how they have to do things. And it scares me that in a diminished area, for the watermen in my area with oysters, that it may be a hardship for them.
Yes, sir. Any other comments or questions from the commission? Well, let me say a couple of things from my perspective. These are tough decisions, and I don't think anybody out there would relish being in these chairs. None of us up here enjoy this. We're not looking forward to what has to be done here, but I personally am convinced that something has to be done here. I'm not willing to roll the dice and risk the chance that 600 license holders that haven't used them in any meaningful way in the last couple of years, 2 to 2.5 years, suddenly won't say, well, I'm going to use them, because that comes out of all your potential harvests. My priorities are to protect the full-time oystermen here who've been through this and been through the lean years and have gone through the terrible years and now find ourselves in a better place than we have in the longest time. I'm not willing to risk that future with a roll of the dice in the hopes that things get better somehow. So I think that we need to take effort control. I think that we have to reduce the number of licenses, and I think that the smart way of doing it is what the Shellfish Management Advisory Committee and Dr. Wesson and others have worked on, is to draw the line for those people that are either not in the fishery or are part-time, very, very, very part-time. I think that helps preserve the fishery for all of you. So to that end, some other harvest control needs to be done, but I like what staff has put together here. If we limit this to a 4-day work week for a few months, that at least saves you all from having to go out and spend the gas and not harvest as much by a reduced daily bushel limit. So there's benefits to watermen on this. I, however, kind of like the idea of having either the day off on Monday or the day off on Friday, so that those are consecutive days.
I mean, this industry's second choice was to take Friday off.
I personally would prefer that. So now I laid my cards on the table. How about you all? Mr. Tanker.
I just would put in a plug for the Pocomoke Sound. I'd like to see us get up there and make sure, you know, what's there. It sounds to me like there's some opportunity. I'd hate to miss it. However, I would like to also say, you know, I can remember, you know, when the little lady from Seafood Council got up here in 2000-something or other when I first started this and wanted to talk about how oysters were almost going to be extinct. And we were going to have Asian oysters if we were going to have a future industry. And I think there are a lot of people hooting and hollering. That was what we had to do. We've come a long way since the desperate times of those. I think your strategies have worked. I'm sure that Mother Nature's played a big hand, but Mr. Wesson, I would congratulate you on devising some strategy that's brought us to this point.
And for the record, Mr. Tankard, that was Frances Porter, and
yes, I believe
that
very
was 2008.
Lady.
And okay. That's exactly what she was saying, that we are looking at the demise and extinction of the Virginia oyster. So, thankfully, she was quite wrong. I'm very thankful that we're at a much better point than we were just 3 or 4 years ago. I would like to see this fishery protected for the full-time waterman for the future.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Mr. Ballard.
I concur with Mr. Tanker's comments on the Pocomoke Sound area and think that's worth taking a look at. I'm having trouble kind of wrestling with a lot of these issues, but one that sticks out as me is the 2 versus 3 men per boat, and I do kind of feel like that we're really just taking money out of people's pockets rather than reducing effort at that point, that you might have a third more boats join the fishery and only 2 men per boat. At that point, the fuel cost goes up, the boat maintenance costs, and we're just kind of taking money away from the watermen rather than actually accomplishing our goal of reducing the effort.
I mean, I think it's pretty. I mean, those are the boats that stay the longest. They are the ones that you know, the other thing we're trying to do is that with a limited stock, to keep it as long in the season as we can. And the more 24s there are out there at the beginning means that the season shortens up in what's available. A lot of guys have 3 until things get bad, then that one goes. And so then they're down to 2. So they don't stay. So it's just another way to allow the season to last, to get 16 a day as opposed to bumping it up to 24. Because everybody can catch 24 right at the get-go in all these areas.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Meltzer, the public hearing is closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. I'm not reopening the public hearing. And the matter is before the commission. I believe we've discussed this. How do you want to proceed?
Excuse me, you got 2 issues. One is, are we going to make effort controls start in 2016 along with the transfer provisions? And you could look at that separate and then look at if and what you would do this year separate. Most of what I've been hearing, the complaints have been what the proposals were to do this year. Most of the public criticism that what I've heard has been the proposals for the rest of 2015. I really have heard a lot of angst about the effort controls in 2016, except for that one young guy who they wouldn't apply to him anyway. So that's my suggestion would be to look at the 2 years separately, with the 2016 seeming to be the less controversial.
Well, we can certainly do that. You want to partition off the staff recommendation into its component parts?
That's what I would. And I'm really looking down at the other end of the table for the shellfish guys.
I think that would be wise.
Well, then let's do that. And let's start with the effort control for 2016, which would be the staff recommendation, is up on the board for a limited entry, and that's the staff recommendation for limited entry provisions here to be eligible for a hand scraper dredge license as of January 1st of 2016.
And in addition to that, there was a transfer proposal for 2016.
That's true. The transfer proposal is included in the... Yep. The transfer process be established as of January 1st, 2016. So are you do you wish to combine those?
Yeah, I would. The 2016 proposals seem reasonable to me to try to protect the full-time watermen that they're making a living off oysters. But again, I'm kind of deferring to the shellfish guys at the other end of the table who are being quiet. I will make a motion, but I'm waiting for the shellfish.
Well, I'm going to interpret that as Mr. Erskine.
Go ahead.
I was going to interpret that as a motion by Mr. Neal here to accept staff recommendation as pertains to license eligibility as of January 1st of 2016 and license transferability as of January 1st, 2016.
All right. That's fine. I wanted AJ to do it, but that's okay.
Thanks.
Well, I'm going to interpret that as a motion and a plea for a second. Is there a second?
I'll second that for... purposes of discussion.
Second by Mr. Erskine for purposes of discussion. Let's have a discussion.
So, Jim, that what we're talking about is taking that limited entry that you suggest less than 20 days. Can you give us an idea if we talk? But there seemed to be some concern about less than 20 days if, for example, a waterman is out there for 1 month in a certain area for a season. 20 days out of the 30 in the month, they get blown out a couple days, might not actually get 20 days in there, but it's certainly still a commercial waterman. What would it look like if we talked about less than 15 days? This seems to be the next bin you were talking about.
If we would go to something like that, I think we would have to, you know, have another let another 62 people in, and you know we would have to think about having the 4-day work week. I think all season afterwards, we would not have lowered the numbers very much. I mean, we would end up only 5%. I mean, so 95% of the industry is still out there working in a lower fishery. So rather than going to back to 5 days, we would probably recommend keeping the 4-day work week after the first of the year also, but more in.
But so you said that would roughly be about 5% versus the 9% is what we were talking about before.
Yeah, you can see right over here. 5% would of the harvest would come out by just by stopping at 15.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Mr. Frantz.
Yes, how asked Jim this question. If we find out exactly how many licenses that will be able to be transferred, I mean, how will that figure in on latent effort if these licenses were sold to people that wanted to go 50 or 60 days instead of 21 days?
Well, I mean, I think all of these entry systems that have been set up by the commission were always a work in progress, and I know there have been limits put on the number of transfers for crabs, you know, at times. So I think you have to get in this for a year or so and see what starts happening, and then if we need to adjust it, we will.
It could be just every year be tweaked by oyster stocks.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Mr. Zeter.
So we adopt this thing, and we approve to eliminating everybody below 20. Are you saying that those guys in that category from 0 to 19 can transfer those licenses?
No,
they're just gone.
They're gone.
But
if they, after this is over, and it's important to them, and they want to go buy one from somebody else, and he is one in, one out.
That's for the rest of those guys down
yeah.
at the bottom. Right,
yeah.
Okay. That's right. All right.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Mr. Ballard.
Just to clarify, the SMAC did not actually come to a consensus on this, but the feeling was it was fairly agreeable in discussions for the limited entry.
Yes.
Mr. Erskine, would you answer that, please?
Yeah, so that was the we discussed a lot of these tables, and it was probably unanimous, I guess, that there was a need to have some kind of limited entry like that. The number thrown around was less than 20 days reported harvest.
Mr. France.
Mr. Commissioner, I'm sure if this is passed that there will be some type of appeal process for ones that want to argue their point.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and in the regulation, it does give the criterion for potentially successful appeal.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Well, then I'll call the question here. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Are there any noes?
No.
No by Mr. France. The chair votes aye. The motion passes 8-1. Thank you. Step one. Second step is what to do about the end of this year. Mr. Neal.
This is a shellfish management committee question. Now, this was voted on, correct? The basic vote was to do nothing, not change anything, don't go to 4-day work week, don't change the bushel limits or any of those kind of things. Is that correct?
So the motion that was passed at SMAC was to vote. The motion on the table was status quo in terms of number of bushels, number of licenses, days of the week, seasons. That was 9 in favor and 3 opposed to this specifically, you know, about the reduction starting October 1 through December 31st of this year.
Dr. Weston?
I said nine.
There he is.
9 were in favor, 3 were opposed.
That was to do nothing, period. No entry control, no anything. Yeah.
All right. Well, entry was a little bit different because we did discuss that at length. We just didn't have a motion about it. But as I understood it, the motion that was 9-3 was about these catch limits, daily limits, shortness.
Leave the regulation as it was. Yeah.
All right. Now my question to Dr. Weston would be, what is your greatest fear if we leave status quo for this year?
These areas are going to be gone long before the season's over. I mean, that's...
So you're worried about hurting the watermen's livelihood for this year?
Yeah.
Am I still talking?
Yes.
My inclination is that's what the watermen want. And for this year, I think... My inclination is let them have it.
Just let them leave it as it is.
Mr. France.
Ignoring science.
Yeah, I think there's also a question of supply for industry. If we just go crazy and wipe it all out, then industry will be weeks without product.
Mr. Zedrin.
What worries me is... If the studies are correct, and he's saying, look, we open this thing up, and then instead of having, how many months? We have 3 months normally on the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these things are fished out in 6 weeks or 4 weeks or 2 weeks. What are they going to do for the rest of the time? So I hear what he's saying is that what their best estimate is doing, let's regulate it so that the watermen have a job for the whole season. And isn't that what you're saying?
Well, it's also so that Virginia can say that it has oysters sell for every week of that you know, Thanksgiving, if all the oysters are gone before Thanksgiving, and then we don't have oysters coming from Virginia on Thanksgiving. So
I do remember a number of years ago or so, Waterman had, as a group, advocated very strongly here to open up all grounds at all times. And the answer, the repercussions of that come about January 1, when the staff's phones started ringing off the hooks about having no oysters left, nothing to do here, and how we screwed it all up. Dr. Wesson, I'm sure, remembers those days. So we've heard from Mr. Neal here that he's leaning towards status quo. Are there some other opinions? Mr. Tackett.
I would certainly not go towards status quo. I think that Mr. Wesson's numbers have been right in the past and they're right now, and that to let our wishers go away quickly would not serve the industry very well, probably not serve the resource very well, and any of the individuals that participate in it. So I would more lean towards staff's recommendation for the 2015 season. And make it a middle of the day that they're off. I know that some people might not like that, but I think processors are probably going to be better off with a middle of the day as opposed to the Friday.
You mean the middle of the week?
Middle of the day. So I think Wednesday off is a better way to go, but that's my opinion.
Are there other things?
I just feel that SMAC put a lot of time and effort into this, and to not listen to SMAC's recommendations or at least let them play a part in this decision here means something. I'm not saying maybe not completely status quo, but I'm not looking towards staff recommendations of everything either. But there are a lot of people invested a lot of time in SMAC.
Okay, so let me see if I have the sense of the commission. Mr. Neal's in favor of status quo. Mr. Tankard's in favor of the staff recommendation. Ms. Haney is somewhere in the middle. Mr. Frantz, can you edify us?
Yes, you know, to be argumentative, I think the people that come over here from the Eastern Shore and that side of the bay would certainly appreciate it more if they had Friday off. If you're going to come over here and stay in a motel room and have to pay for a day that you're not doing anything, it's kind of hard on your pocketbook.
Mr. Ballard, you have a suggestion?
I see both sides of that. And I'm wrestling with this whole issue. I agree with a lot of Jim's data, but I've also seen on our own private ground that we think we're going to have a terrible year, and then we have a great one. We're wrestling a lot of big issues here, but I think to get through it, the best thing to do would be to attack these bullets kind of one by one and start from there.
Mr. Commissioner? Can we hear from Dr. Wesson and see if this recommendation is kind of a great big all-inclusive work together, as opposed to being able to take one of these at a time and go through them? Or, in other words, if we just take one of these and approve it or disapprove it, how does that affect your overall plan?
Well, the one day off and the two licenses, two limits for both, kind of go together. I mean, that's a way to slow the leaving of the product from the rock so fast. I mean, those, if you know, it automatically bumps it on that thing. If you go to the 24 and you take 4 days, you got 96 bushels versus the 64 right now that come off in a week per boat. Where if you go to 5 days and you stay at 16, you're up to 80. So the combination of the two per boat and the four-day work week was the way to get us through the fall, was the way to slow a very big fishery down and allow oysters hopefully to be caught from October 1st to December 31st in all the areas that get open. And there are various ones that are being open. Some will have a lot, some won't have a lot. So the longer you can keep a group of fishermen in that local area, then they don't run off and they attack the area that's opening next, basically. So that was the thought process in coming up with those four different choices. I mean, truly, we should be going to 6 bushels per boat. I mean, that's what we should be going to. And so the going to 8 for 4 days is a way to take into account that they do use the same amount of gas. And if you're going to go for that day, you're out for that day. And you make your expenses back.
Mr. Erskine.
So, again, going back to SMAC, again, we didn't have an official motion when we were in person, but Jim, like he said, sent out those options that we're talking about now with the days of the week and the number of licenses. And you had the results by email.
Yeah, it was nine for the two per boat, 1 day off a week, and then it's just one for 6 bushels every day, and one they wanted nothing and one ended up staying. So it was 9-1 basically to do the way I had it down there for the recommendation.
Could you say that one more time then?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we did have a. We did have a vote from the SMAC on this issue.
And it was.
And there was 9-1 to take 4 days with two limits per vote.
Okay. 9-1.
Mm-hmm. Mr.
Erskine.
I would only say there was one individual on an SMAC committee member that was very vocal during our meetings about status quo, and he reiterated in that email that he suggested status quo because the committee had made a motion already to maintain status quo, and then he felt were forced into these four options to pick one. So there was kind of that dissenting opinion. And I would say that a lot of our discussion at SMAC was, and Jim showed the graph, the industry's had two very good years of harvest. Last year, reportedly, the best harvest in 25 years. And there hasn't been a downturn. So how is SMAC deliberating this as putting on harvest restrictions when there hasn't been that downturn? So Jim was saying that what he's projecting based on SPAT sets, again, what Mr. Ballard said is, you know, the SPAT sets, where's the data for the SPAT set? We saw that, and it didn't seem to be quite as good as it had been in the past. So that's what we were wrestling with, but there are committee members on SMAC that said we haven't seen a downturn in harvest. So until we see that, why should we be discussing harvest restrictions? And that was wrestled with not only here, what we're doing now, but at the committee for 6 months. So it's not an easy issue, and that's what we were discussing. So I wonder if there's a compromise on that one. And I understand what you're saying, Jim. There needs to be a reduction in the number of licenses on the boat. But we've worked with 3 for a number of years, and it's been 8 bushels a man. If we take 1 day off a week, which I understand that the public doesn't want to do that, and I understand SMAC voted status quo, but that would be some reduction in effort, coupled with what's taken place and what we just passed for a motion in 2016. Maybe that's a compromise for 2015.
It all comes in just how fast you want to clean stuff up.
Yeah, we'll keep. Sorry.
I mean, we're going to get all of it available by the end of the season.
Yep.
In the 4 day 16 and the 5 day 24. Just how fast you catch it.
And I would only follow up that, you know, if you say Wednesday or Monday or Friday, there are going to be other days that are going to get blown out, and it's going to be a Tuesday that's going to get blown out, nobody's on the water, and then Wednesday's off, and nobody's on the water. So. Yes. It may be 2 days, and that stretches the resource, you know, even more. So That's going to happen at some point in time from October to December.
That's factored in normally.
Mr. Tackett.
Yeah, but as he just mentioned, that's factored already in.
Well, fair enough, but it's not factored into the industry that's going out saying now we only, instead of 5 days a week and we might lose one and have four, now we've got only 4 days a week and we're going to get blown out one day, which is factored in. You only got 3 days. So it makes a difference, you know, to the industry. Even the day off, you know, is something, again, SMAC wrestled with a number of times. I mean, so.
Well, how about a compromise of a half day on Friday instead of a full day off on Wednesday?
They'll catch them about half a day.
Well, for a few weeks they will, and then they won't. Mr. Zedra.
As for your half day, I went on the first day of the oyster season in Rappahannock, and most of the boats were done by 8:30. They were already back, so they did their catch in a couple of hours. The slow boats were 2 hours.
Yep, that's a good point.
So half a day ain't going to do nothing.
I agree. I withdraw my idea. It wasn't a very good one. Mr. Ballard.
Dr. Wesson, did I just hear you say that even with these options, you thought we would have depleted the fishery by December?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll be gone, even with these things. It's just how many days we can extend those. Yeah.
I mean, so part of me feels like if that's the case and we're looking at a doom situation anyway, wouldn't we protect the rocks better by doing it all in 20 days if that's truly what's going to happen so that we're not dredging for 60 days across them?
Oh, yeah. If we shorten that, but then it means at times that there's no product coming out of Virginia. I mean, the ideal thing for the orchard rocks is to cut it down to half a season.
No, I'm not suggesting a date cut down, but if what you're saying is true, that we're truly going to be, if we just let them have at it and the oyster fishery is going to be finished in 20 days because lack of resource, in my mind, that would be better than it being finished in 60 days because that's twice as many dredge trips.
There's still a lot of them that stay and work for those more oyster rocks.
Even if they're not catching anything?
Well, they go to the next area that opens the next month. You know, they're staggering in, so they just keep jumping from area to area.
Commissioner Gould, by 282217, may I request a question?
No, I'm sorry, Ms. Melzer. Again, the public hearing has been closed, and I'm not going to reopen the public hearing. The matter's before the commission for their decision. Well, the commission operates on a motion. We can always try a motion and see how that goes. And the chair cannot make the motion.
I'll start.
Mr. Zedron.
I move we approve staff recommendation, except rather than have Wednesday off, have Friday off.
I second it.
The second by Mr. Munner. Motion by Mr. Zedron here.
Okay, I want to clarify. I want a clarification of his motion. Is he just talking about the day off, or is he talking about the bushel limits per boat? I mean, is he talking about the entire?
I'm talking about the entire recommendation, except for instead of taking Wednesday off, take
the Friday off. Right.
Are there other questions about the motion? Is there a discussion about the motion? Mr. Ballard.
I would not be in favor of that. I think I'd lean more towards we have two issues that seem to really be the focal points here, one being the bushel limit per boat 24 or 16, and two being the number of work days. I would think we might be able to just split that down the middle, and that might be a little bit more amenable, 50% to the watermen, 50% to what the commission wants. So we either take 24 per boat on a four-day work week or we do a five-day work week with 16 per boat. Instead of taking all of one side or all of the other, just split it down the middle.
So it would be a four-day work week with a 24-bushel vessel possession limit. Do I have that right?
I think that's what I'm trying to say.
Mr. Erskine?
So I think I understand what Mr. Ballard's saying. I think that means that the last two bullets would be eliminated. That's the 12-bushel clean cull oysters, but the amendments to allow a maximum of 2 8-bushel limits, that would be stricken.
Yeah.
And then you would change Wednesday for Friday was the motion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we'd have to change the maximum daily vessel limit to 16 bushels, from 16 to 24 bushels. Isn't that what you mean?
Well, it'd be the way it is now. Right?
Yeah.
Right. So you wouldn't take the second to last bullet.
If I had to choose between those two, I would take the 5 and 16. I think 16 is more important than the day off.
I'm getting a little confused here. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
What did you just say?
If I had to choose between those two that you came up with, I would take the 5 days, 16 per boat.
As opposed to 4 days with a 24-bushel vessel.
Yeah.
Which is what Mr. Ballard was just...
What I'm trying to understand here, why would somebody want to spend gas for 5 days and get 16 bushels?
You can do it for 4 days.
Well, I'm talking about for the resource now. For the resource. In this case, the resource would be better protected with 5 days at 16 than 4 days at 24. And it would last a little bit longer. It would be 96 versus.
And the proposal is 4 days at 16, right?
Yeah. But if I had to give up one, I'd
four at 24.
That's not, well, no, it's the
no,
I
think
proposal and the motion is for 4 at 16.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the motion on the table.
Right.
Mr. Ballard here was kind of discussing perhaps what seemed to be maybe a substitute motion.
And what was that?
I was for 4 days and the 24 bushels per boat, and my logic being that if you run into a lot of bad weather and you can only work 2 days that week, you can still manage to catch 48 bushels, as opposed to if you're only working 2 days and you only get 32 bushels.
I'd like Dr. Wesson to comment on that.
Dr. Wesson?
I mean, we're talking about October, December, which is the least bad weather of the season. And we're not talking about after January 1st when we start losing a lot of days. I mean, we don't lose that many days in October through December. We lose a few, but not many.
So how do you view his suggested amendment, 4 days at 24?
That 5 days at 16 would be better.
Mr. France.
Yeah, if you get 5 days at 16, it looks like to me you're going to get more boats on the rock because the extra crew members are going to be picking up with another one on an extra boat. That's what they're going to do. There's plenty of boats out there.
Well, we have a motion on the table here for a staff recommendation, and instead of Wednesday off, it would be a Friday for no harvest. That's the motion. And the second, anyone on the commission can propose a substitute motion that would take precedent. Mr. Ballard.
I'll propose a substitute motion that we go to taking Friday off with a 24 bushels per boat limit.
It will be a four-day work week, Monday through Thursday, and 24 bushel vessel limit per day. So that's a substitute motion. Is there a second to the substitute motion?
I would second that because we, if we find out it's not working, I mean, we can always revisit this thing, I think. And I think that kind of listens to the watermen out here a little bit about that they're saying it's a great stock. And if we find out it ain't a great stock, then maybe we can revisit this and knock it down to the 16 bushels. And that way we kind of wait and see it a little bit on the waterman side and wait and see a little bit on our side. And then if we need to tweak it, we tweak it, and yet we got some of these other restrictions in place. So,
Mr. Cedron, I love the idea of being able to tweak some things along the way here, but this motion would only apply from October until December. So by the time this would get into effect and it would get underway here, and we'd be halfway through the season, and we have one meeting December 9th, I believe it is, that would be our only option for tweaking.
All right, I would draw my second then.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ballard. I didn't mean to cause you harm with your motion. So there's a motion, substitute motion on the table here. That would be a four-day week, Friday off with the 24 vessel possession, 24 bushel possession limit. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Haney. She was closer to my ear, my good ear.
And discussion?
Discussion.
That's all right. Just could we also add in, not to repeat Mr. Tankard, but to reevaluate the grounds for Pocomoke Sound? I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you?
Friendly.
We have other items in the that we jumped over.
Yeah.
Yes.
So does the motion also include these other bullets?
Yes.
That Madden-Tong licensors are going to be included, and there are no agents, and there's a 12 bushel limit on clean coal. I mean, is that the motion?
Yeah, that's the motion.
Okay.
Ms. Haney, just to clarify here, is that the motion that you are seconding, the substitute motion? That's what you intend. Okay. So everyone got everyone on the same page on that?
Yeah.
Okay. We understand what we're voting on here. So it's a substitute motion with a proper second. Let's call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
No by Mr. Tankard. In the interest of camaraderie, the chair will vote aye as well here. The motion passes 8-1.